Well, thank you, Travis, and good afternoon. I also want to thank the organizers for this invitation. It's really great to be here, also for the workshop. And so yesterday and today, we have learned already quite a lot about convection, how it's important and how it is important to model stars, in particular cooler stars which have extended surface convection zones. And there are several types of them. But in 20 minutes, I have to make a selection, and so I decided for today to talk a little bit about Delta Scuti stars and about solar-like pulsators, perhaps not quite surprising. And in particular, Delta Scuti stars would address our current understanding or not understanding of how to model the cool side of the classical instability strip, and also about perhaps not so familiar to most, to all of us, but acoustic radiation, the effect of acoustic radiation equilibrium model, and how that could affect mode stability. In solar-like pulsators, well, we were talking, it's apparently a very hot topic at this conference, and also for the workshop. Let me add a few ideas of how we could go about the surface effects in solar-type stars, and provided I don't speak too slowly, I may also say something about amplitude. So here are some properties we all probably know in great detail. Just to point out, there are stars where we have quite a lot of frequencies, so I think even more now than 79. And if we were in the position to identify them, which we unfortunately can't, then we would be a great deal further and doing something what we did in the Sun many years ago and trying a first inversion, or structure inversion perhaps. And also to remind you that the stars are driven in the helium-2 ionization zone by the Kappa mechanism. Now, in order to deal with convection and the coupling with the pulsation, we have to use what is known as a time-dependent convection model. And I just address here three, which are probably currently the most widely used. The first two originally suggested by Vassaburu Uno and also the other one by Douglas Goff are based on the mixing length hypothesis. I just want to say that much to it that in the static case, they produce fortunately the same results. I'll give you the same formula. But when it comes to dynamics or the coupling to the pulsation, they rather differ. And that's a result in the way what physical picture you adopt behind it. The first one essentially is an eddy which was created at some Caltech state and stays there forever. By maintaining essentially the energy it gains by the buoyancy force against turbulent drag, by the nonlinear effects of turbulent drag, and turns over all the time. The other one at first neglects or ignores these non-linearities, saying that the eddy is created at a certain time, evolves linearly, but the creation time and the annihilation or destruction of the eddies are described by a model to take into account the non-linearities. And that has a finite lifetime, and the evolution of the convective properties is described by so-called linear growth rate. The third one is rather very different, also better known also in the engineering models as the so-called Reynolds stress model, and it has been adopted to the solar case by Chinese group, in particular Zhong, and has been used recently by those guys here in the context of Delta Scuti stars and other stars. All what they have common is they adopt the so-called Buzanescu approximation. We've heard about that by Pascal, for instance. And of course, the ultimate goal is to have some estimates of the turbulent flux perturbation, that the Lagrangian perturbation delta of the convective heat flux and that of the momentum flux. I'm afraid time doesn't allow me to say more than that, and so you may find a little bit more in a conference proceedings, was a Hellas meeting in Warsaw. Now here we see an attempt to use to predict the cool and the red edge of the lower part of the instability strip for the radial mode using Douglas convection model. By means, not the first one, so there have been done previous attempts, just thinking about Baker and Goff, probably were one of the first to produce successfully the red edge in RLIRI stars. And I just want to point out here the evolutionary track of a 1.7 solar mass star crossing the lower part. It's in the hydrogen core burning phase. And the red strip here indicates where we find with these calculations overstability for the radial mode. And one way to represent this is to use so-called the stability coefficients, which is essentially the ratio of the imaginary part to the real part. And again, I point out here there is this red path, and as a function of effective temperature for models just crossing through the strip. So we have well-defined blue edge. This is not surprising. We had that many, many years before by Stellingworth and others. And the red edge, clear distinction where between unstable and stability and stable region. Now, with a particular model in mind, now we are now in the position to say, what are the physical processes that describe this return to stability at the cool edge? And I distinguish them by means of whether it's related to thermal energy equation. So we have the perturbation of the radiative flux, just think about the Kappa mechanism, but also now, because of the time-dependent treatment, also the convective heat flux. And the other part is related to the perturbation in the momentum equation, and that's related to what astronomers call turbulent pressure and its perturbation to it, which is actually the RR component of the Reynolds stress tensor. Now, similar calculations have been done also, for instance, by Marc-Antoine de Gray, and he produced this beautiful view graph here, where he summarizes also previous calculations, such as those from Zhong et al. From 2001, indicated by the blue circles. And that particular star, which I was just describing from the 1.7 solar mass star, is located here. The small dots are the observations, and Marc-Antoine's results are shown here, at the red edge of the fundamental mode and to higher radial order, and also the blue edge. Now, that's all fine. So we have three models, all produce a red edge, great. Let's have, however, a closer look at it, what's really going on in the physics. And I describe this here with work integrals. So if the work integral is decreasing, we have damping. If it is increasing, we have local excitation. We see here in the radiative interior, it's mostly damping. And really, as said at the beginning, most of the driving occurs here in the upper part of the helium-2 ionization zone. And so at the surface, which is somewhere here, we get a negative value of the work integral, which means the mode is damped. It's, at least it's defined in this view graph like that. Now, what about, again, the individual contributions? So the red one is that coming from the thermal energy equation, or you may call it gas pressure, and the blue one from the perturbed momentum equation. And indeed, it is the momentum equation again, the turbulent pressure, which gives you this decisive contribution in that particular calculation to make the mode eventually unstable at the surface, or in the whole star. But without it, we would get an overstable mode. So it is the convection dynamics, in particular the momentum flux perturbation, which seems to be here the crucial input. So just to mark it here again, momentum flux is here the important issue. So what is the result from other people? I show here first from Zhong and Deng calculations. They find actually a different answer. They also get a stable mode, but they find that actually the turbulent pressure is an exciting agent, whereas in the previous one it was a stabilizing one. And here they found the important one is viscous dissipation, so the small-scale turbulence. Just think about it. I mean, all these models describe only one length scale, but we have, of course, a whole turbulence spectrum. And so if you have large pulsations, large amplitudes, which are large compared to what happens in the sun, and because viscous dissipation is depends on the divergence of the displacement, that could produce an important contribution, and this is what those people find out. We know in the sun this contribution is very small. as it was shown, for instance, by Bamforth. Anyway, so let's have a look at the third one. And just to say the answer already now, here, it's not the turbulent pressure, it's not the viscous dissipation, it's the convective heat flux. This is Marc-Antoine's result, and it differs in the sense that he also includes the effect of now the perturbation of the turbulent kinetic energy. That's something different than the viscous one. This is, just think about, we had a week ago a talk about it by David. It's actually really at the smaller scale how energy is dissipated by the kinetic energy. Anyway, so the result is we have three methods or three convection models, all give us a wonderful red edge, but the physical mechanism is different in all three models. Okay, but let's stay on with one of them, and I show here again this plot we've seen before. And of course, convection needs calibration. And one possibility is if you change, for instance, the most obvious parameters, such as reducing the mixing length. Don't use these numbers too literally because it depends on which convection model you adopt. You see that if you reduce it, you get you push out the red edge to cooler to the cooler side. But one thing I really want to attract your attention to is let's have a look at this first model, what Uno et al., Wasserburg Uno, put forward some time ago. We have an overturning eddy, so we have actually the temperature difference the consequent or density difference and buoyancy force, which drives the flow from here. In the direction of gravity. So we have here the buoyancy source. On the left-hand side, we have what I call turbulent track, is when the fluid moves essentially almost horizontally at the surface, at the upper plate. And of course, we need a closing returning flow in order to have a closing path in order to conserve mass. But since we adopted the Busnesk approximation, and that essentially means we filter out any generation of acoustic waves, this is a potential additional source, or actually sink, where part of the of the buoyancy energy can go to. And so we tried to estimate that by this term here, which I now call acoustic drag. Again, so we slightly or temporarily just relax a little bit the so-called Busnesk approximation. And so PAC is essentially the rate of energy of acoustic generation per unit volume. And that we estimate by the so-called Leighton-Proudhon formula, where here W is C, W is the vertical component of the velocity, C is the sound speed. And that scales, so there's a turbulent Mach number. And that scales for the large scale flow with a factor of 5. And if you include that, you see we get a similar effect as if we were to reduce the mixing length. But we also see an effect at the blue edge. So, and it's not a small effect. So this is something which usually in most calculations is ignored, and I just wanted to let you know that it's perhaps something we might also think about it in the future. Now, coming to the sun, and we have seen this wonderful picture here already before by yesterday by Tim, which shows very nicely the variation of the amplitudes here in luminosity from about 1,700 Kepler stars, ranging from 3 to 950 ppm. The sun is somewhere here, but I should warn you, this is not really luminosity, it's here nu max, so it's the frequency at which the maximum amplitude is measured, as also pointed out by Tim yesterday. And so the sun has around 3,000 microhertz, the maximum, so it's somewhere here, and here's the one mass evolutionary track. So no doubt we see a lot of oscillations in this star, in many stars. And an issue that has been addressed quite often, and that's a picture by Travis, is this problem of the surface effects. So we see here actually the difference of observations minus an adiabatically computed solar model, in that case model S, and the adiabatic computation overestimate the frequencies by roughly 13 to 14 microhertz at 4 millihertz. Now, there have been done in the past calculations by Colin Rosendahl use by replacing the outer 2% in radials by numerical simulation, in that case by Stein and Ortlund, also a plot which you have seen yesterday, I think. If you do that, again, between a standard, observation minus numerical simulation, you get a curve like that. And at 4 millihertz, I would say you get something like 22 microhertz difference. So where does this come about? So unfortunately, it's not the same, or I would actually say fortunately, it's not the same, because this is only half the story. There comes even more effects to it, which I explain in a moment. But we know, as also Sylvain said this morning, this afternoon, morning, that it is again the momentum flux in the equilibrium model which gives an additional contribution to the pressure that increases the acoustic cavity, simplified explained, and therefore reduces the frequencies. And in most calculations, at least in the equilibrium calculations of typical stellar evolutionary calculation, that is not taken into account. But of course, it is taken into account in numerical simulations. And so I show here now the ratio of the of the turbulent pressure to the total pressure between two numerical simulations, shown here in color, and an extended mixing length formulation in which the turbulent pressure is taken into account. And you see here two differences, one of which is that there's a lot of overshooting here from the numerical simulations, which is not really accounted for by the one-dimensional model. And we also have a larger peak here compared to the numerical simulations. What is very important is actually the gradient. Just to give you an idea, the gradient of the turbulent pressure almost is 80% of the total pressure. Admittedly, this is from the black curve here, so if we were to use the numerical simulation, that would be a smaller value. And that's one of the things we have to improve on. So this is now a similar, just kind of mimicking now the numerical simulation, but using a 1D model. Again, adiabatic calculations with and without turbulent pressure, we get this answer here in the frequency differences. Just to compare this to the observation, we said, okay, wow, we're almost in the same order of magnitude. Unfortunately, the curve is not quite right, but it's not too bad a start. But unfortunately, adiabatic is here written in boldface, and there are more effects to it. Namely, non-adiabaticity, again coming, which I define, again, effects related to thermal energy equations and convection dynamics related to the momentum equation. And that's if you take this into account, it goes the other way. So if you add them up, we end up with a net effect of, I don't know, roughly something like minus, at 4 millihertz, something like 5 or 6 microhertz. So again, when compared with the observations, we're doing rather badly. But there's hope. They just remind you, that's what the hydrodynamical simulation tells us. And so that's a difference. It's essentially this, why does our 1D model, which produces the blue curve, differ so much from the symbols here coming from the numerical simulations? And that's the question. Because if you were, these vertical arrows have the same length. So if you just would add our apparently missing physics, which comes from the numerical simulations, to our calculations here, we might perhaps get again back to what the observations say. Right. Well, I discussed this a little bit with Rainer, and so again, I learned from him that actually this overshooting region, which I showed you before from the turbulent pressure, contributes about half of the effect from the total of increasing the acoustic cavity coming from the turbulent pressure. And then another effect, which is not in our 1D model, is what they call backwarming, but I discussed it also today with Douglas. I think it's more like inhibiting cooling. Is because the temperature fluctuations are so large that the opacity is affected by it. Increasing the opacity means that the convective eddies have less chances to radiate. Less radiation makes convection more effective. Making convection more efficient reduces the convective velocities. And that could perhaps be related to this extra bit, what we had in our 1D model, where we overshoot quite a lot in convective velocities compared to the numerical simulations. So that's something, I think, where it's worth it to look into it, and perhaps we can kind of get in similar results what the numerical simulation tell us. This is just to let you know, this is also possible, a similar answer we get also for other stars like Itapu here. I don't know what the chairman says, if you can have two more minutes. All right. Then I tell you a few things about the amplitudes. This is predictions. And this is Kepler observations where the symbol size is signal to noise ratio. And obviously from simple scaling laws, we see that as we approach the cool edge of the instability strip, we get much higher amplitudes than what observation tell us. And that's a serious problem, which is not completely solved at the moment. I have to say, of course, because Tim is shaking his head, these are scalings which are, of course, already outdated. We know there are better ones. But by scaling, I mean full physical computations and not some scaling laws which are fitted to the observations. That's what I mean by that. So we want to understand the physics behind it. So I hope I could reduce your head shaking. I think I will skip that. Just to give you an idea, this is part of the calculations, which is the rate of energy that is produced by the convection and injected into a particular mode, coming from the Reynolds stress contribution. It is actually was first derived in a similar form, first by Goldreich and Keeley, and then adopted and improved on by those guys here. And again, in this calculation, we see mean turbulent pressure plays a role. So if you don't get it right, you don't get the excitation rate right, which is important for the height of the modes, and V is the RMS velocity. So in order to get the RMS velocity or the height of a particular mode, we have to compute P, and eta is here the damping rate of the mode, or the inverse of which is the mode lifetime. So this is one issue, and perhaps similar problems where we don't get the surface effects right, that could also be a contribution here to the excitation, which is also taking place only in a very thin layer at the surface. Another issue is small-scale turbulence, and this is where we shuffle everything, our ignorance of turbulence into this parameter, where we have assumed something about the turbulence spectrum, like Kolmogorov, but also about the time dependence. And I'll just show you here a first attempt where we do for the first time use the same equilibrium model, the same eigenfunctions, and we put it to different groups who produce excitation rates. In that case, it's the Meadow group by Samadi and Goupil, and also the Cambridge Renner group. And so it only differs essentially by this parameter S, or a function S actually. And these are the results. So if we look here at 83 models, it scales something like that. And if you look at the S, again from the different groups here, then the parameter does change not very much. So where's the problem? And the problem is, I skip over that here, very likely that because in order to produce the height, you not only need P, you need also the damping rates. And so if you look here at combinations of first observations and theoretical predictions, we say that the mode the damping rate scales approximately with the fourth power of the effective temperature. But Kepler tells us a different story. It actually scales by much a higher exponent. And in fact, currently there is a paper in work by Thierry Arpajour and collaborators, which will increase this number even a little bit higher. So it's very likely that this obviously is one of the major problems why we do not get the amplitudes right in hotter stars, namely because our damping rates are just too small or our lifetimes too large at hotter stars. And similar observations have been done from the Corot data by Baudin et al. And What could be the possible reason for that? It's only a suggestion, and that is scattering. And scattering means that part of the mode energy when it comes to the inhomogeneous surface layers is not reflected back essentially into the same mode, then rather in neighboring modes which have similar frequencies but different L. And that depends on the Mach number, and that increases with effective temperature. And so this is one of my suggestions to look at. And so I close here and thank the chairmen and you for the extra time.
Questions for Gunther?
Hey, it was just 3 minutes.
Sorry for shaking my head, Gunther.
That's all right.
It was more in puzzlement than anything. This idea of making the mode lifetime a power of temperature, if you just go back to your previous slide, you have these exponents of power laws for temperature.
Yeah, like that one.
Yeah. I just think it's the wrong function. There's no physical reason that I know of why it should be a power of temperature. And the Kepler data, which Tovey Apichot were plotting, in fact, is more like an exponential than a power law. Is there any physical reason why it should be a power?
That's a tough question, so I don't know. I think it was just the first attempt when we did it in 2009 with Bill Chaplin.
Yeah.
To see whether we can fit whatever functions, and we knew that the effective temperature apparently was the most dependent function on it, and that was our first attempt. So we have not done any, let's say, analytical work on that, why it should be that, but that's an interesting point to look at. But it's not easy. Surprisingly, it's not easy because damping rates, there's a linear damping rate which you compute here. So it's a linear problem, whereas the excitation is a very highly nonlinear problem. And yet, the linear problem seems to be a tough thing to understand.
I have a question related to that. Are these for modes that are sort of similar in size compared to eddy length scales, or is it for all modes? Altogether. I mean, is it for all modes? Well, only for modes that are larger than your largest eddy, convective eddy, for example.
What, damping rate? So.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The one we show here is those of the. I think I don't need it. is those of the most prominent modes, right? In particular. So we took. The three or five, I took an average of the three or five modes which have the largest amplitudes around the peak in the power spectrum of if you know, in the sun it's around 3 millihertz. Now, we are just about to get also frequency information from Kepler as now the mission goes on, because this is a very hard thing to measure. And once we have that, we could probably then address this particular problem in greater detail. But it's a very interesting thing also for me personally, because we know that the shape of the damping rates in the sun have a very, very characteristic plateau exactly near the maximum. And if we see that in other stars too, as activist theory predicts, that would be already great. And then we get a little bit of a handle on it, of how the excitation affects modes which are further away from the maximum amplitudes.
All right, I also have a question. So you seem to get in troubles when you get to higher temperatures. Can it be that the Kappa mechanism starts to play a more important role the closer you get to the red instability strip, the red border? And the second point is, what about the rotation? I mean, if you get to higher temperatures, you will also have a higher rotational period.
Yeah, well, I was expecting this question from you, yes. Well, Vicky Antocci, she published recently quite an interesting paper, and there's one dot in the diagram, which I thought I will say, but where is it? Oh dear. Ah, there we go. this green symbol is probably the first likely detection of an hybrid pulsator which shows both delta scuti, and therefore delta scuti pulsations, and consequently driven by the Kappa mechanism, and at the same time also solar time pulsations. So the questions, yeah, well, probably your first question, yes, if you go to the red edge of the instability strip, both effects may become important, and it's not very it's somehow related also what I said before, because our convection model apparently seem not to reproduce probably this very outer region in the stabilified stratified radiative photosphere. So what is called there, I don't know, the opacity mechanism. So that's actually how much an convective eddy loses radiation due where the opacity plays an important role is important. Even in the sun, the opacity mechanism is not an important issue, but it does exist. Yeah, so I think that's something we have to look into more carefully once we understand, and perhaps with the help of numerical simulations to improve our 1D model. Yes.
Yeah.
Say it again. Oh, this
also has abundance anomalies. So
is it? I don't know. Does it have abundance anomalies?
I think that this star also has abundance anomalies,
oh, yes,
like
star
an EM star, and this is quite important.
Oh, okay.
It's not only that it has the two kinds of oscillations, but also it has abundance anomalies like an EM star. Okay?
Yeah, this is an EM star, and I will actually talk about it on Thursday. So also.
Oh, okay, fine.
Thanks.
Just quickly back to the plot you showed before of the damping as function of effective temperature.
You mean the one as a function of effective temperature?
Yeah, the last one.
Sorry, I do this. Maybe I'm faster this way, but probably no.
Did you look for dependency in log G too? Or did you just assume that because you plotted as a function of temperature?
No, we didn't.
Okay. I would like to, a plea to everybody to, when you look at stuff like that, include both temperature and gravity. Because often, very often, you'll have alignments in the HR diagram of those two things, and you don't know what you're looking if your regression just picks up.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, it's related to what Tim said, because we even don't know what's the functional form of it.
Yeah.
And so we probably need also to learn on, it will not only depend on effective temperature, I completely agree, but it was at least a first attempt to get a handle on it.
The first attempt should always be to look at both effective temperature and gravity. There's a very, very, very simple routine
in
IDEO that's called
linear
regress.
Thank you.
Okay, let's thank Gunter again.
Okay.